This is Donald Smith from Cornell University. The date is January the 22nd, 2008. We're in Delray Beach, Florida, with Mrs. Sylvia Sprecher. Sylvia's the wife of Dr. Isidore Sprecher, class of 1939. And we're here to talk about some of the events of their life together, him as a veterinarian, and you, Sylvia, as his partner for many years. So, Sylvia, thank you for agreeing to do this. Maybe you could start by talking about how your husband's family came from Russia, and also how your family came from Russia, a little bit about their background.
I can tell that Iz's family came, but I don't know under what circumstances or anything. But they did have a grain business, which probably didn't do very well, and that spurred them into coming to this country. As far as my parents were concerned, my mother and father met each other through relatives in Odessa, Russia, where my father was stationed with some of the Tsar's people that worked. They were trained to fix anything that was broken. But he wasn't happy and decided that it would be better to come to this country, where he worked as an engineer in one of the factories, and then gave that up to be able to buy and sell old houses.
How did you meet your husband?
I met my husband at an adult camp nearby his home. I was a secretary during one summer. A cousin of his evidently took a good liking to me, and she introduced me to him.
And then you were married in the islands during the war?
I was married in British West Indies during the war. We made up our minds that if he were stationed somewhere where there wasn't any danger of war, that I would come. I took the civil service exams to be able to come overseas. And at that time, Uncle Sam gave me a very nice ride from my hometown to Puerto Rico. From Puerto Rico, we left and went to British West Indies. There we were married on July 27th, had a honeymoon in Barbados, courtesy of Uncle Sam, and then came back to work for one of the officers at the base until he was discharged.
So you were married in 1945?
45.
You said earlier when we chatted that you and your husband had a long list of people that had to sign off on the marriage certificate. Could you talk about that?
In those days, the colonel had to come to see if you were white. They didn't care to have any of the officers or any of the soldiers marry natives. And so when he came, they sent the permission slip to go. And it went all the way up to Washington, D.C., and came back down again. It had 13 endorsements on it, but we were married on July 27th.
What was Dr. Sprecher's set of responsibilities during the war?
Well, he had to inspect food, which was the major, mm-hmm. but there were officers who had cats and officers who had dogs, and there were a few dogs on the post. So that he was busy. Oh, he had a very nice assistant, and they managed to do everything that they could do.
Before the war, he graduated 2 years before the U.S. entered the war in 1939. He was in practice in Connecticut during those 2 years.
Yes, he was in practice in Derby, Connecticut. But by the time he came back, that area had changed when the state put through a very large highway.
And so you went back to your mother's home, you said?
We went back to his folks' home and then decided that we would trade it off and go back to my home. And at that time, there were vacancies, and he decided that he would practice in Waterbury, Connecticut.
Were there other veterinarians practicing there at the time?
There were two other veterinarians practicing at the same time.
And what was the nature of their work?
There was one veterinarian who did large animals exclusively, and the other veterinarian was an exclusive small animal. And my husband decided that he would take the small animal route.
During his educational experience, he distinguished himself in many ways. He was a very good student. I know he graduated near the top of his class. He had some good friends at Cornell. Do you recall who some of those were?
Well, there were two brothers that, I can't recall their names.
Sasmore?
Were the two brothers in Sasmore? No, Dan Sasmore was one, but there were two other brothers. There was a Ferber.
Bob Ferber, Schiller?
John Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
And
Harry Schiller, you said.
Harry Schiller, yes. Mm-hmm. Most of the boys came from New York.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very happy to be with a country boy who knew horses and cows very well.
During his years in practice, he often told me how interested he was in developing new techniques. He was very good with his hands, good as a surgeon. He also talked about the way in which he read up on new techniques and learned things from, you know, from the journals. Do you recall any specific aspects of that?
Well, he had a lot of scientific journals, and he always had a place in the garage for all his things that he would study. In later life, he used to do some experiments, especially for cancer research, on his own. He didn't have anybody sponsoring him or anything. But he then would take some of the animals he had that would have cancer and bring them down to Yale University.
Somewhere along the line, he became very interested in supporting Cornell. And in the mid-1980s, you and he opened the rededication of the library. Could you talk about that,
well,
that episode?
Well, when he came to Cornell, there was a very small library. It was a one-room thing, a very little place to study. He vowed then that if at any time he could afford it, he would change that, which he did. I think that's very commendable.
Mm-hmm. And then later, during the time that we worked together, you funded the cancer program.
Yes. That's another thing. He had two people in his family who died of cancer. I had one person in my family that died of cancer. And when you see that, especially on younger people, today it seems to happen more often on older people, but you can never forget it. And as long as we could afford to do it, we did.
Well, that's a very wonderful thing that you both have done. As you look back on your husband's career, are there things that that you remember with special happiness, special things that occurred during his years in practice?
Well, there were always little stories about people who would come in, you know, and with their dogs, and you could tell stories. We had one gentleman who was a minister who loved cats, and he had a soft heart for every cat that came his way, and he had about 23 cats in his place. And at the time that, and they were all well fed and well cared for, but at the time when he passed away, his wife was nonplussed. She didn't know what to do with them all. And so she called him, and they had to euthanize them. And that was a terrible, terrible time in his life. He never wanted to put anything to sleep.
Was he happy as a veterinarian? Is that what he wanted to be?
Oh, yes. When we first came back, I said to him, all you have to do now is go to medical school and go and be a surgeon. He said, I don't want it. I want my animals. And that's where he stayed.
And why did you suggest medical school?
Well, I thought it would be a more lucrative life and also not as hard a life as a vet. Mm-hmm. In the days that he started to practice, you were a 48-hour man, without any other outside help. Until you were established and you began to get outside help, you still were there 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody went, there was somebody that had to stay there. He usually had someone who lived in the hospital, but when it came to puppies at night or kittens at night, he had to have help.
Mm-hmm. When you came back for a reunion, which you did often, you always saw Dr. Murray, John Murray.
Yes.
And what was the nature of the relationship that Iz had with Dr. Murray?
I don't know, but they were very friendly, and they liked each other.
Do you think that was the case when they were classmates in school as well?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We often talked about him.
You also recalled a Chinese person who was in his class, yes. Dr. Francis Kwong. And you tried to meet him in China once.
Yes. Francis Kwong had graduated as a veterinarian from Cornell, went back to China, and at the time of the revolution, he was relegated to the northern part of China to be working as a peon. And then, when that phase of life was over, he came back to China and was at the head of an agricultural school. That is where we tried to see him, but we couldn't make contact with him. But then when we came back to this country, Iz and he corresponded for a while.
Well, in closing, I want to thank you. And do you have any way in which you would like your husband, Dr. Sprecher, to be remembered at Cornell?
Well, I think they've honored him very nicely. And I see that the name would be left there for quite some time. And I think that's a very nice recognition.
Maybe just now would be a good time to talk about the name, the spelling of the name, Sprecher with a K and Sprecher with a C. When he was in college, I believe he went with the
H.
And then later it was changed, is that correct?
Yes. He changed it because people would come in to the office and say, Sprecher, Sprecher. So if you put the K in it, then you get the sound of Sprecher. It's more of an English sound than it is. The German influence sound is Sprecher, which means speaker. But in order to anglicize it, then it became easier all over to say Sprecher.
And then when his name, your name, appeared both at the library, the learning center, and also in the comparative cancer center, we used the CH because that was the spelling when he was a student. Okay, well, thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you
very much.
It's been a pleasure.